This is Radio Influence.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crushell. The Con Man is here keeping us on track, and we are your weekly source for performance information. If you have any questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic that you want us to cover, let us know. Reach out to us on our website, crushperformance.com. You can follow us or tweet us on Twitter at Jeff Crush, or join us on Facebook. Our group is called The Talent Grid. You can apply to join there. We'll let you in. We're hooking everybody up with the world of performance. And if we like your topic or your idea or your question, we may dedicate a segment or an entire show to the topic. So let us know for sure. Last week, we kicked the Crush 2017 campaign off with a bang. Our good friend, the coach of champions, Jim Fannin, joined us with some sage advice on how to set yourself up, organize, and get in the right mindset to have a championship 2017. If you want to get that podcast, go to our website, crushperformance.com, and get the hookup there. A must listen, in my opinion, if you want to set yourself up for not just a great 2017, but a 2017 and beyond. Today, another powerful show as the Crush War on Sugar continues. We'll be dedicating one show each month to the Crush War on Sugar as we crack down on the latest science and research associated with diet and the health implications of what we're eating. We're also going to visit with the top experts from around the world as we try to get a better understanding of how sugar and our diets in general are impacting our health as well as our performance. And I could think of no better way to kick off our 2017 War on Sugar campaign than a discussion with our good friend, Dr. Anne Deweese Allen. She's the chief of biomedical research at the Glycemic Research Institute in Washington, D.C., and the director of clinical research at the Glycemic Research Laboratories. Dr. Allen, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Crush, how you doing?
Very good, Dr. Allen. Listen, our war on sugar continues, and there's no better way in our mind to kick off our 2017 campaign than a talk with a good doctor, Dr. Anne Deweese Allen. So how about we start this year's conversation with a look back on what we've learned? Because some of the research that's come out over the last few years, our understanding is growing, but some of the research that's come out over the last few years has been incredibly alarming. Look, Doc, we know about obesity. We know about the trends in childhood obesity. We know about diets. Nothing seems to be working. But when we start hearing about the relationship between sugar and high glycemic diets to certain forms of cancer and now degenerative brain diseases, holy smokes, this goes way, way deeper than I think we first imagined.
Yeah, and it's way scarier. When I started, you know, Glycemic Research Institute in 1983, it was just like, oh, look at this. Hey, this determines how food's going to act in the human body. This is interesting. And then we fast forward to 2017, and all of the new clinical data out there, massive data by Harvard, by Yale, by Princeton, by NIH, massive amounts of money being spent to go, hey, wait a minute, we were wrong. Obesity isn't even caused by a lack of willpower, and all calories are not created equal. So don't even. So now the paradigm is, why are we even talking about calories? Calories are close to irrelevant.
Thinking a calorie is a calorie, that's an incredibly antiquated way of thinking. It's the old way of thinking, isn't it, Doc?
Oh, it's so old, it's not even funny. And the thing is, you know, how do we bring this new paradigm of understanding how the human body, I mean, works? Every day we understand more about the human body, right?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing for researchers like myself is, okay, we have this scathing new research that's been defined and redefined and validated and revalidated by different universities, and we all come up with the same conclusions. Our clinical research facility usually is spearheading the clinical research, but other universities picked it up. They do millions of dollars worth of research, and they go, whoa, it's worse than we thought. So antiquated is like T-Rex, okay? We can say calories equal T-Rex thinking. So the old way of thinking is that the energy content of foods, and the way we define that is called calories. It was makes them fattening, right? Okay, that's, oh, calories, calories, calories. Let's see. Let's look on the box and see how many calories. Irrelevant now. And how do you get that across to the American public or globally, okay, to say, hey, guess what? We got to change all the labels now on all food, on all fast food, all restaurant food, all grocery store food, Because the new way of thinking and understanding is, it is not the energy content of food, which is calories, that makes them fattening. Now, right there, that sentence is crazy. From the time that man has been on this earth until like the last couple of years, it's been calories, right?
Right.
The game is calories. And now we have to realize it's not the energy content of food, which is calories. It's the effect that foods and beverages have on the brain and the hormones that regulate fat accumulation. That's the game. So now, wait a minute. The whole game just changed. And, you know, we know the pathology. The conventional explanation, let's just say the old way, is energy imbalance. Oh, you take in too many calories and you get fat, right? And you get diabetes.
Right.
Okay? That's the old paradigm. The new paradigm is, okay, wait a minute. We know that the biggest enemy in health today, based on what we eat and what we do, what we put in our mouth, is insulin. Insulin is now called the death hormone by pharmaceutical companies, because the reason they named it that is giving people insulin to offset diabetes has become a major problem. What happens? They gain weight.
Right.
And insulin reduces your lifespan. So let's see. You get diabetes, you got to go on insulin, but insulin reduces your lifespan, exogenous insulin, taking insulin injections or patches. And so wait a minute. This whole thing is wacky. So really, the way that it goes is anything you eat that raises your blood glucose levels, which is high glycemic, stimulates insulin. That insulin prompts the fat cells to accumulate more fat and make more fat. The pancreas then secretes insulin to bring the glucose down, and then finally your pancreas goes, hey, guess what, buddy boy? I ain't playing this game no more. I don't like what you're doing.
Oh.
We're not playing that, so I'm just going to go wacky, right?
Right.
And that's what type 2 diabetes is. Type 2 diabetes is when your body gets so pissed at you, it goes, okay, buddy boy, that's it. I've had it. You be fat, you be diabetic, you're on your own. It's really the pancreas just getting seriously pissed.
You're so right, Doc. So let's just backtrack here, because we've just covered some incredibly important points. If we look what the government are saying, what the, you know, the food guides are saying, what most nutritionists who've gone through the typical schooling and education are saying, they're all focusing on a calorie. Now, let's just establish what a calorie is for everybody who might not understand the definition of a calorie. It is a measurement of energy, the amount of energy needed to raise 1 gram of water, 1 degree Celsius. And Doc, the old way of thinking, based on what you're saying here, the old way of thinking is the amount of energy in and energy out. That is totally obsolete now, is what you're saying.
Yes. And I love that you said that, because here's one thing we can do is, since a caloric measurement is turned energy, like turn up the heat. How much heat does it take? Okay, well, guess what? You have actually three types of fat cells in your body. One we didn't even know about, called bright cells. We ain't even getting into that today. But there's white adipose tissue fat, WAT, and there's brown adipose tissue fat, okay? And then you've got bright cells, but we're not getting to that. It's too complicated.
Right.
That's a new one. But basically, here's the deal. If you want to turn up the burning of calories, okay, and where are calories stored? They're stored in the adipose tissue fat cells, but they're stored in white fat cells, not in brown fat cells. Now, here's the beauty of what you just said. Turn up the heat to burn a calorie, right? How much do you have to elevate the temperature of water to burn a calorie, to burn energy, right? Okay. Well, you do that internally, but here's how it works. White adipose tissue fat, like the fat cells around your belly, you know, the fat cells that drive us crazy, right? The white fat. They just sit there and they accumulate all these calories. La, 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 la. Okay, let's make some more fat cells. Let's get fatter. La, la, la. They don't care. What, you think they have a conscience? Okay. But what stimulates the body to burn fat? It's brown adipose tissue fat cells. BAT. Okay? So there are so many pharmaceutical companies now trying to figure out how to stimulate BAT because the BAT cells, the brown fat cells, tell the white fat cells to burn fat. Now, how does that happen? It happens by dietary-induced thermogenesis, okay?
Right.
By something you eat. It happens by exercise, okay, which is a very poor way to stimulate white fat, by the way.
Right.
Not very efficient. There are a variety of mechanisms, and also internally, if you have high growth hormone levels in your body, if you have high testosterone, even estrogen tells brown fat cells to burn white fat cells. So think about it. When women go through menopause, they gain weight. Guess why? They've lost estrogen. Now, you would think that taking estrogen will fix that and it's all. No, it doesn't work that way. You can't do it that way because that's going to increase your risk of breast cancer and other things. And taking exogenous testosterone will increase your risk of prostate cancer. So the body's much more complicated than that. You can't just reverse, you know, put it in reverse gear and back her up, baby. That's not going to work.
No, it's a balancing
act. But what you can do is to stimulate brown fat cells to tell the white fat cells to burn fat, okay? We can talk about that in another call, but in order to avoid that whole thing, okay, we have to stop turning the key code in our body to fat storage, the key code on the fat cell. Stop turning the key code, and that's the whole topic today, is mystery foods, hidden sugars. So this whole thing of, oh, we're going to identify calories and tell you how many calories in sugar, and that's going to solve the problem. It ain't going to solve the problem because every sugar has a different key code turned on it, whether it turns fat on or doesn't turn fat on.
Wow, you are opening a Pandora's box. We're talking with Dr. Ann DeWeese Allen, Chief Biomedical Researcher for the Glycemic Research Institute. Doc, so we've got it down now. The calorie is a calorie. That is old news. What we're talking about is the new way of thinking, which is looking how food affects the brain and hence the hormones that control the reactions in our body. That's where our minds have to go. Well, you brought up maybe one of the most convoluted and twisted things that's happening in the food industry right now. And that's this whole idea of sugar. And that, again, it goes right into our theme of the crush war on sugar for 2017. And that's why I think this is such a great conversation to kick off our 2017 campaign. You mentioned the mystery foods and the fact that there's so many different types of sugar. In a previous conversation that you and I have had, you mentioned that there might be as many as 100 plus ways to say sugar-free on a product. So how in the heck do we go about regulating sugars? And certainly, if we don't even know what the sugars are, how can we count the calories? It's crazy.
You're totally right, and the calories don't even matter anymore. We have to come up with a new paradigm.
Right.
Determining calories is physics, okay?
Right.
That's physics. But determining what makes us fat is biology and neurology. Those two things aren't connected. One is physics, one's biology and neurology. What are you saying to the brain? Like, that's why artificial sweeteners are, you know, a million times more fattening than eating a whole bowl of sugar or drinking five regular Cokes, okay? That because the brain is going, let me see. You just ate this artificial sweet and you just drank it. It's on the back of my tongue, okay? Doesn't even matter if you spit it back out. In clinical trials, we have our subjects spit it back out. They don't even have to, you don't even have to swallow it. So think about that. If you don't have to swallow something and it just hits the back of the tongue, it can make you fat. Does that tell you that we need to change something? So if we look at sugars right now, okay, so people say, well, I'm just going to go by the calories. Really? That's really interesting. So you're just going to look for sugars. Let me tell you something. The sugar industry, and I don't know how they got this done, but they did. They talked the Food and Drug Administration into saying that the most fattening sugar on the face of this earth per clinical trials, okay, and we could go into the numbers. So I'll give you an example. The number in terms of fat storing and obesity on this sugar is 130. Regular sugar sucrose is 87.
Wow.
Okay? So the higher it is, the fatter it's going to make you, and the more insulin you're going to spill. And that sugar is called maltodextrins. Yeah, guess what? Go in the grocery store, and the next time you start looking at foods, look how much maltodextrins are in them. Even Starbucks put maltodextrins in their products, okay?
Right.
Their coffee products. So, and even ice cream that says no sugar. So now, somehow the sugar industry convinced the FDA to say that maltodextrins is not a sugar. It's the most fattening sugar in the world. It is a sugar. But you don't have to call it a sugar. So now there's all this ice cream in the grocery store that will make you fatter than a pig that says no added sugar or no. Or seriously? Seriously? What do you think is making it sweet? What's in there? Is it just air? Is it ice cream air? So now they're putting massive amounts of maltodextrins in everything because they can say that it's not a sugar. So given that, how do you win the sugar war? You've lost it right there.
Right. So, Dr. Allen, when you talk about the glycemic index or of the maltodextrins compared to sugar, that correlates to how the body reacts. And we could sort of tie that directly to fat storage and energy storage, correct?
Oh, absolutely. There's really three things that happen that are going to lead to obesity and diabetes. And of course, type 2 diabetes is a direct correlate of pissing off your pancreas and stimulating insulin constantly. I think, you know, it's a good idea for your listeners to say, here's some scathing things you'll go like, what? What?
Right.
Okay. The fact that diet soda makes you more fattening than regular soda. Okay. The fact that black coffee is incredibly fattening. Okay. There's an example. There's a very few calories, maybe 5 calories in black coffee, but it stimulates insulin. Okay, so whatever's going to stimulate blood glucose or insulin is the enemy. There really is only one enemy that we can directly correlate with that: obesity, diabetes, and a lot of other diseases, cardiovascular disease, cancer. Even the American Cancer Society is recommending that women get rid of some of that excess body fat, because the estrogen inside the fat cells are causing reduced survival times. And a lot of complications in breast cancer that lead to reduced survival time and reduced susceptibility to treatment, to chemo or radiation or whatever. So we know that, okay, if you're a woman and you really want to worry less about breast cancer, then you got to get that fat reduced from around the midsection and around the breast tissue. That's just a fact. Same thing with men. Adipose tissue fat is directly correlated with prostate cancer. So we there's a correlation from the American Diabetes Association, not just on getting fat, but diabetes, okay, and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, which are growing at an alarming rate. So now, scientists are calling Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes, because it's a lifetime of stimulating insulin in the brain. And so is it preventable? To a large degree, it is. Some of it's genetic. We're not sure of even all the causal factors. But the biggest thing anybody could do right now for long-term healthy survival of their children and themselves, and less obesity and less diabetes and getting your weight under control, is stop turning the key code that causes fat storage, that causes insulin to spill, that causes blood glucose to rise, and all of that triggers hormones. When you elevate blood glucose and insulin levels and you piss off the brain like that, then what's going to result is hormones that go crazy in the human body and make you fat, diabetic, Alzheimer's, and make permanent fat cells that you can't get rid of. So we can avoid the cascade. But Crusher, the thing is, avoiding the cascade is not pretending that sugars are the enemy when we don't even know which sugars we're talking about.
No, Doc, you're absolutely right for sure. Hey, listen, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, I want to continue the discussion as we attack the war on sugar here on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody. More with Dr. Andoise Allen right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Kershaw. We are your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic or question you really want us to delve into, let us know. We could dedicate a segment or an entire show to your idea. So let us know. You can get to us at crushperformance.com. Send us an email. You can also tweet us at Jeff Crush or join our Facebook group, The Talent Grid. Today, we continue the Crush War on Sugar as we address and look at the science behind our diets and the issues related to health. Today, we are joined by Dr. Andoise Allen, the Chief Biomedical Researcher for the Glycemic Research Institute in Washington, D.C.
Dr. Allen, you said some alarming things, and I know we've talked about this on the show previously, but maybe for some of our listeners, let's talk about this, the black coffee. Now, you and I have talked about the benefits of black coffee, the polyphenols. NIH has published some very, very powerful documents showing that there are certain health benefits to drinking coffee, but to hear that, something that has virtually no calories can be such a contributor to fat storage is incredibly alarming, right along with the idea that diet sodas, who you'd think would be, you know, one of the solutions in our fight against obesity and sugar, is one of the culprits that's causing the problem. It's just a wacko bizarro world almost.
It is a wacko bizarro world. But until we come into alignment, I mean, Harvard and Harvard Medical School is one of the leading proponents of low glycemic and stop stimulating insulin. They've come out with some of the most credible data on avoiding sugars that elevate in foods. It's not just sugars, it's foods.
Right.
Fruit juices and things like that. One of the biggest culprits, would you please people stop juicing things, okay? Juicing things makes them stimulate insulin and blood glucose when the fruit itself doesn't. So stop juicing stuff and stop giving your kids juices. And is that not backwards of what we've already... Oh, we know to need to get these fancy juicers that break down the pulp and blah, blah, blah. It don't matter. So, it don't matter. If you juice that sucker, it's going to stimulate blood glucose and insulin. So if we go back to coffee, we've been doing coffee and caffeine research since 1983. You know, I was lucky enough to receive a patent in that field in caffeine and coffee research. And what we found out was black coffee can make you fatter than a pig. Absolutely. And it's because the caffeine in it is such a type that it stimulates blood glucose and insulin. And again, there's your trigger. If you stimulate insulin,
right,
then you're going to supercharge that entire fat storing system. So what we're looking at is fats and sugars, okay, and foods. It doesn't even have to be called a sugar, as we said in maltodextrin. Really can supercharge the brain's reward system, okay? So there's a couple of systems in the brain.
So I like
that. Prefrontal cortex.
Hey, Doc, so I really like, sorry to cut in there, but I really like what you just said. The brain reward system, because let's face it, based on what we're talking, the new way of thinking is about the brain and hormones.
Yes.
So when you say something like the brain reward system, I think this is something that everybody can really sink their teeth into. Maybe explain that a bit more, because that's a great perspective, I think.
You're totally right. And it's something we didn't even consider. And the only way that we found out about that, the brain reacting to certain foods and sugars, was when we did the clinical research on why would diet soda be fattening. There's nothing in it.
Right.
There's nothing. There's no calories. So you can't tell me the calories are making people fat when black coffee have no calories and diet soda has no calories. But what we found out is that doesn't matter, okay? Because what happens is when you drink something with an artificial sweetener or something that's higher than on Brix, and that's a sweetening level we use in chemistry, that it's high enough for the brain to go, holy moly. Okay, listen, do you think your brain has ever seen an artificial sweetener that's 1,400 times sweeter than sugar? It doesn't know what the hell that is. It goes, holy crap, what are you doing to me? So what your brain thinks is you're going to eat 1,400 pounds of sugar. That's what it thinks. So guess what it starts doing? Making more fat cells and spilling out insulin to deal with 1,400 pounds of sugar. Mm. That's called brain glycemic indexing. Switch the brain, switch the game, right? You got to switch the brain to switch the game, which is obesity and diabetes. If you don't switch the brain's thinking, you're not going to switch the obesity and diabetes game. That's what it's coming down to. So the brain says, okay, well, I'm just going to, we need to get working on making some more insulin, which is then to go into that cascade of making more fat cells and piling everything into that white fat cells, when really what happens? The sugar never comes, does it?
Right.
So you drink a black coffee or artificial sweetener drink or a diet soda, and the sugar never comes. So the insulin has nowhere to go, does it? It's not being used to burn up the sugar because there's no sugar. There's no real calories. So what happens is, depending on what we eat or drink, can supercharge not only the fat storing capacity and diabetic capacity of the body, because guess what? When people say, is the brain really that involved? And I go, what? I go, hey, I tell you what, right now, why don't you do something or make a move or try and talk with your brain not being involved in any way, okay? Tell me what you can do.
Touché.
Where the brain isn't involved.
Right.
Go ahead.
Impossible. Impossible.
Right. The brain's involved in everything. So when we supercharge the brain reward system, that overpowers the brain's ability to tell an individual to stop eating. Think about what I just said. Whatever you eat or drink supercharges the brain's reward system and overpowers the brain's ability to tell you to stop eating. Okay? And that was evidenced in addictive foods, okay? Like chocolate candy and things like that, are equally as addictive to the brain as smoking a crack pipe. Okay? So if a kid eats a candy bar, it's the same as smoking a crack pipe in the brain's addictive center. So now we keep doing this all day, every day, and then the brain's going to take over. And it's go, hey, okay, we're really addicted to that ice cream you're eating or that candy, so you just need to keep eating that. You think it's your idea that you want chocolate? It ain't your idea. It's your brain's idea. And one of the main reasons the brain wants chocolate in women is to stimulate serotonin. In women, the happy chemical in their body is serotonin. It ain't testosterone like in men, okay?
Right.
So dopamine and serotonin are very addictive in the brain. It's like somebody smoked three packs of cigarettes unfiltered for 20 years. It's like an alcohol addiction where the person's been drinking a quart of Lord Calvert every day for 15 years. It's the same addiction in the brain. So with alcoholics and drug addicts, the more that they consume them, the more they want them, and they can't get off it. You can't not stimulate a brain circuit. So you would have to wean yourself off of these foods and sugars like maltodextrins and black coffee and things that stimulate insulin to the brain's reward system for you to even be able to control what you put in your mouth.
So we're going to need like Betty Ford clinics for battling the sugar addictions.
I got a better idea.
Yeah,
let's change the food.
I agree. Holy smokes. We're talking with Dr. Anne DeWeese, Alan Crush favorite, the chief of biomedical research at the Glycemic Research Institute, director of clinical research at the Glycemic Research Laboratories. Dr. Alan, this is an incredible way to kick off the Crush War on Sugar here in 2017, because we really do need to get an understanding, and I think we're laying it out here. Well, we know now that the old way of thinking is a calorie is a calorie. That's out the window. We're talking about the brain and hormones and the effects foods are having on the brain. And we know that the artificial sweeteners, that's a tricky, tricky business, because, you know, there are sweeteners and sugars out there that they're not even calling sugars on labels. So we're getting tricked that way when it comes to the foods we're consuming. So it's an uphill battle. Dr. Allen, before we go any further, you mentioned several times the glycemic and the glycemic response and glycemic index. It is appearing more and more and more in the literature and the scientific research now. Maybe before we go any further, can we just explain that? Because I really do believe at the root of everything is the understanding of the glycemic index and the body's response to the glycemic ratings of the foods we eat.
Well, it is. And the reason that it is because everything you put in your mouth, whether you spit it back out, like in diet soda trials, or gum, you don't have to swallow gum, but gum even has a glycemic index because there's either an artificial sweetener in there, there's guar gum, acacia gum, stuff like that, and then there's usually a sugar. So if there's a sugar-free gum, it's an artificial sweetener.
Right.
Well, I mean, and now we have all these new sweeteners, agave and stevia and all these new sweeteners that the average person doesn't have any idea how that metabolically is going to act with the body. And then the bigger issue is if you look at the packets of sweetener in a restaurant, okay, the white packets, the blue packets, the green packets, do you really have any idea what's in there? I don't think so, because they put a little bit of artificial sweetener or a little bit of what's called a glycoside sweetener, which is like the rubidioside A or stevia or glycosides. Even agave has glycosides in it. So really, are you going to tell the average person, let's look at the glycoside content, let's look at the ratio of very fattening calories in that packet. So in a packet, you're legally allowed to say it has no sugar and no calories. That is not true. The government, the Food and Drug Administration, lets us say, if we take something and put it in a packet that size, we can say no sugar, no calories. Not true.
Wow.
Absolutely not true.
Right.
Because they've only got a tiny amount of artificial sweetener or a tiny amount of the glycosides, the glycosidic sweeteners, and the rest is another type of sugar, which could be maltodextrin, it could be glucose polymers, it could be one of the most fattening sugars on the face of the earth. So again, we're talking about how could a human being figure out if what they're eating is fattening or not. If they pick up a sugar packet in the restaurant and go, oh, great, no calories. Oh, great, no sugar, right? Okay, those are called food laws. So what we know is that we can't calculate it by that, okay?
Right.
We have to calculate it by the blood sugar and insulin response. That is the key. The blood sugar, insulin, and resulting hormone response that triggers leptin, lipoprotein lipase, neuropeptide Y, all these hormones that shunt food into the fat cells and take control away from a human being on what they eat by going, hey, you know what? It's 4 o'clock. Remember yesterday we had a big cup of coffee and some candy bars? Well, let's do that again. Okay, because the reason the brain wants to do that is, one, you're addicted to it, and number two, it says, wow, lots of energy. Yoo-hoo! Do you think your brain cares if that's going in the fat cell? It ain't wired up that way.
Right.
So what we know about the glycemic index is that's the only way to identify if something's fattening or not fattening. That is the only way to identify it. Is brain glycemic indexing, okay, looking at how the brain responds, or regular glycemic indexing by pulling blood out of you every 15 minutes and testing that blood to see what in the heck's going on and where the calories and the foods are going and how they're going. So I think the most scathing thing that's happened in the field of the glycemic index is the March 2016 breaking news research funded by the National Institutes of Health, published in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention, and backed up by numerous clinical organizations and universities, is that, and this is going to make you crazy, high glycemic carbs and sugars are directly linked to lung cancer, okay? Number one. Number two, the glycemic index in foods and beverages consumed are linked to lung cancer, okay? And high glycemic diets, foods, and beverages increase the risk of lung cancer by 49% whether you smoke or not.
You would never naturally correlate sugars to cancers, like certainly not lung cancer. I mean, the average person, I mean, just wouldn't connect those two. You know, we get the idea of lung cancer and smoking, but you know what? When we look at smoking and its relationship to lung cancer, it's only a portion of the lung cancer. This is the missing portion. Everybody's been wondering, okay, so what's causing all these?
Why
am
I getting lung cancer when I don't smoke?
Right.
Okay?
Holy cow.
There's a couple of reasons. One of them that was discovered like in the 70s and 80s would, if you had a basement, okay, especially in the Midwest and northern towns and cities, certainly not in Florida because we don't have basements here. I'm in Tampa, and I'd love a basement. We ain't got no basements, but there are toxic fumes that go through the basement floor and into your house, and you breathe them. We know about that, okay? And we know about the genetic factor, but here's what we didn't know until 2016, okay? Non-smokers, people who've never smoked a cigarette.
Yep.
Consuming high glycemic diets or foods or beverages are twice as likely to develop lung cancer. Non-smokers. If you didn't even smoke. Now,
wow.
Smokers with the highest glycemic index levels, the ones who eat the highest glycemic foods, are, guess what? 92% more likely to develop squamous cell carcinomas in the lung as compared to the lowest glycemic index group. Okay, so in 1,905 patients newly diagnosed with lung cancer, the researchers found a higher risk of lung cancer in patients with the highest daily glycemic index intake. That's not a joke.
That is not.
That's real science.
No, Dr. Allen, that is no joke at all. What a fantastic conversation. Hey, we have to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, though, let's wrap this up. Let's get to the nuts and bolts of the Crush War on Sugar conversation with Dr. Andoise Allen. Let's talk about breakfast and let's look at some solutions right here on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody.
Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the fabulous Sports Babe, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're
listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crochelle, and the Crush War on Sugar continues right here with Dr. Andois Allen. Doc, let's get right back into it as our time is short. You know, we look at the exposure to sugars and high glycemic diets. You know, I don't think it's about Halloween or the big holidays, Valentine's Day or Christmas. It has more to do with what we're getting exposed to on a daily basis. That's really the big concern.
Absolutely. And I'll give you a good example. If we talk about kids and what they eat, right, for breakfast, the research scientists made the following statements. Okay. And this is just absolutely scary as crap.
Mm-hmm.
Foods like bananas, cornflakes, puffed rice, and, quote, most cereals increase the risk of lung cancer by 50%.
50%? And those are all foods. You think of a banana. These are foods we correlate with health and wellness.
Right. Bananas, cornflakes, puffed rice, and most cereals. Now, at the Glycemic Research Institute, we are the ones who did the research on every single cereal in the grocery store to see if they were high glycemic. And guess what? They all are. They're all high glycemic.
Wow.
So when people are thinking, and so mothers ask me, it's like, well, oh my God, I can't get up. You know, I got five kids. I can't get up and cook eggs. You know, it's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I say, well, you can reduce the impact, okay, by eating a really high fiber cereal and not putting bananas on it. Don't even, now we're recommending that that parents don't give their children bananas at all, at all. No bananas, nothing, because they stimulate blood glucose and insulin, and they do something else in children. They stimulate the production of progenitor fat cells, which are the permanent fat cells in children that decide if that child's going to be a 35-year-old obese diabetic or not.
Hmm.
So
wow.
Bananas stimulate progenitor fat cells in children, in babies, in infants. Even if the mother's pregnant and she's eating bananas, it goes into the baby, okay?
Right, it happens.
We are now saying that obesity starts in the womb.
Right, wow.
Based on what the mother ate. So what can we do if she says, well, I have to give my kid cereal. Okay, go get the highest fiber cereal with the lowest sugar and lowest carbs. Because one of the way they trick you is putting the sugars into the carbs category, and you're not looking at carbs, you're looking at sugars. You have to look at the carbs and sugar and then get the highest fiber then. Milk helps reduce that shunting of foods into fat cells, milk itself. So I would do a low-fat milk or a 2% milk, right? And then put natural low glycemic fruit on it, which is anything with the word berries in it, okay? Peaches and pears are low glycemic. You can get great frozen fruits and vegetables. You can go Walmart and get, there's really, we tested the fruit in Walmart. I'm not associated with Walmart, so there's nothing going on there. But the frozen fruits in there had really high phytochemical values, okay? Or you can just get fresh fruits. So bananas are out, but like peaches and pears and anything with the word berry, blueberries, blackberries, cherries, anything of the berry world, including peaches and pears. But bananas, no. Watermelons, no. So it's a matter of understanding how these foods, again, react to the human body. But that the lung cancer thing and the fact that even in children, okay, just in humans, you from eating bananas, cornflakes, puff rice, and most cereals increase the risk of lung cancer by 50%. That's some scary stuff. Now, Crusher, I think you said you might make that article available to people on your website.
Let's do that. I will post that this week. That article will be available at crushperformance.com this week under our blog section. I'll make sure it's there. We'll also tweet and Facebook it out there so everybody knows about this. We're talking with Dr. Andois Allen, Chief Biomedical Researcher at the Glycemic Research Institute in Washington, D.C. Dr. Allen, this correlates very nicely with a recent article that came out from the Public Health England where they're saying sugary cereals along with drinks and spreads contribute to the average 11 grams of sugar children have before they go to school. And they're saying, look, hey, even before these kids hit the bus or start their walk to school, they're consuming over half their daily sugar quota right at breakfast. It's a travesty. Doc,
And here's the other problem with that.
Yeah.
When you elevate blood glucose levels and insulin, you lose a huge amount of cognitive function. So these kids are good. It's like reactive hypoglycemia, okay? So these kids are And if you know, I'm sure everybody can relate to, you know, you eat a big meal or you eat a bunch of sweets, and then half an hour later, or even black coffee, you start crashing. You get reactive hypoglycemia. Mm-hmm. And you're like kind of spacey and kind of pissy, and you're like feeling kind of like you want to insult somebody or smack somebody. That's because your blood sugar is really low. Well, imagine these kids consuming these foods at breakfast and then trying to go to school and learn something. Your brain won't allow data to come in when it's all foggy. And the other thing that does that is Pop-Tarts, any kind of Pop-Tarts, or bagels.
Sure, high sugar, high carb, simple carbohydrates broken down into sugar. They're all related to the glycemic response inside the body. Wow.
You know, the thing is, we have evolved a very efficient brain system, okay? Humans have, mm-hmm. to help maintain a healthy and consistent body weight. And that what it does is signal when it's time to eat and when it's time to stop. So it's like the brain's on a four-hour time clock of eating. Every 4 hours, you're going to get hungry. So you know what I mean? When you're really, really hungry, you just can't think of anything else but food. And you know, like, God, I got to get some pizza. I got to get me some pizza. You know when you have a really strong craving for food? Okay, so a lot of times it is pizza, okay? If in the evening you go, wow, I could really go for a pizza. Well, your brain wants that pizza because it has so many carbs in it. And it's going, if you don't give me, remember the brain only works on carbs. It doesn't know what protein is. It doesn't care what protein is. It doesn't care what fats are. It cares about carbohydrates that it can use to survive. So it's going to tell you, give me some ice cream. Give me some candy. Give me some soda that has sugar in it. Give me an artificial sweetener soda. I don't care. I don't know the difference. It will tell you. And so these highly appetizing foods override the signal of the brain that says, okay, it's time to stop eating and I'm not hungry anymore, okay? It overrides that. So the body responds to the override by elevating blood levels of appetite-suppressing hormones like leptin and insulin higher and higher as body weight increases. But the hormones become progressively less effective as the body develops a tolerance. And guess what that's called? Insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome. What percent of the American public has metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance? 82%.
Wow. That's a big number. We're talking with Dr. Anduis Allen, the chief biomedical researcher at the Glycemic Research Institute. Dr. Allen, a few minutes left. This hour has flown by. So I just want to recap a couple of things just from my notes here. One of them was to talk about juicing and just, you know, how we have to really change our thinking. Couple big things. You mentioned black coffee being fattening. That goes against everything you would think. People associate juice with getting nutrition and being healthy better than some of the sodas out there and everything. But the juice itself is as detrimental as having a soda. So that's a shift we need to make. So in the last few minutes here, Dr. Allen, let's talk about solutions here, because I think we've really raised the awareness and got people thinking, but what can we do? For breakfast, for example, would you agree, or would I be right in saying something like a stone-cut oatmeal with frozen blueberries and strawberries?
Yeah, and the thing is that I know that's difficult for women. So what I tell mothers to do is, hey, just cook a big pot of oatmeal, because instant oatmeal, you can't. It doesn't work. It's just glue.
Right.
It's glue. Cook a big pot of oatmeal and stick it in the refrigerator, right? And then they can eat on that and put some fruit on it. But for you black coffee drinkers, you know, one of the things you can do to undo that is put a pure protein. The creamers and that you put in coffee, forget it. Every single creamer on the market, you know, the liquid creamers, I don't care if they're low fat, whatever. No, dump it. Those are worse than the coffee itself. What does help is actual real milk protein. So low fat, 1% or whatever. If you're going to drink, if you have been drinking black coffee, put some milk in it. Very low fat milk, 1%, whatever, okay? That's what you really need to do to somewhat offset what's going on.
Sure.
Okay, so obesity is really caused, if we just go down to the bottom line, by these brain-driven overeating that hijack the brain reward network, right? And so that brain reward network is going to override everything you do and control what you do and how you do it. So one of the things that really pisses me off is the whole fruit juice thing. Honestly, moms and dads, for the love of God, would you please stop juicing stuff, okay? If you want to take a perfectly good food that's low glycemic and that isn't going to cause all of these paradigm shifts in obesity and diabetes and cancer, don't juice anything. I know they've got all these commercials with these incredible juicers, and I want to rip my hair out every time I see it. My husband will actually get up and turn the channel. He goes, no, we're not watching this because you're going to go berserk.
How many big screens has he lost because of those commercials?
I'm telling you, I go berserk, and I go, I'm calling them now. He's like, honey, let me get you a cookie.
Right.
So it's hard not to, but it doesn't matter what the juicer is. The ones that grind it, the ones that forget it. Okay, if you take a fruit or a vegetable, but let's talk about fruits, okay, because that's the main culprit, and you even juices do it, okay? You take a food, a vegetable or fruit, and then you juice it, you turn it into a high glycemic insulin-driving machine, okay? So we're telling parents, don't give your kids more than half of a cup in the morning of any kind of juice, and that juice would be limited to a high-pulp orange juice or a pure apple juice, okay? Make
right.
sure that there's no sugar added sugars on there. So any of the other juices are very high glycemic, but we know that kids can't tolerate more than half a cup of juice. So why are we even bothering with that? And I'm not talking about juice. I'm just talking about juice that you buy in the grocery store like orange juice or apple juice. But when you juice something in a juicing machine, you totally ruined that food, and you make it go through the body at a highly accelerated rate. So what has to happen to slow down the glycemic index and the insulin response of fruits or vegetables? Well, if it's in a liquid state, it plummets through the body really quickly. There's no slowing down. It's on a high speed, and you're going to get blood glucose and insulin spill because you've ruined the way that a person would typically eat it. If you eat an orange or an apple or a pear, that's not going to happen. But you juice that sucker, and that's going into the main context of stimulating blood glucose and insulin, the death hormone, and elevating risk of diabetes, obesity, Alzheimer's, and cancer. I mean, really? Yes. Stop juicing things. Just take that fruit and put it on the kid's cereal or put it in a bowl. Stop juicing.
Well, great stuff, Dr. Allen. Hey, we're out of time, but what a fantastic way to kick off our 2017 War on Sugar campaign. Dr. Allen, I have to thank you for all your advice today, and we'll look forward to continuing this conversation because we've just scratched the surface, I have a feeling.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating topic. And I'm sure your listeners are going, what in the world did I just hear? What? It's hard to process it and know what to do. But really, in the long term, if you understand what these hidden sugars are, okay, and you avoid them for yourself and your family and your children, and you know what foods to eat, then you can really conquer this.
Great stuff, Dr. Allen. I got to thank you again for your time. Much appreciated. And we look forward to our next conversation.
Oh, great. It's great job, Crusher. Always fun to talk to you.
Well, there you go, everybody. We are incredibly out of time, but what a powerful conversation. Hey, share this one with your family and friends. Please do. It's just about raising awareness. This is what the Crush War on Sugar is all about, and it will continue all year long. Got to thank Dr. Andrew Allen for joining us again, and I want to thank you for tuning in. Again, please share this with your family, your friends, your teammates, and your fellow coaches. And speaking of coaches, next week we kick off the Crush 2017 look at coaching and coaching development, the all-powerful position of being a coach. I'm really looking forward to this one. So for me, Jeff Crishell, and the Con Man, we'll talk to you next week.
Chef Brian Duffy here. I've got a new show called Duffified Live that's unlike anything you've ever heard. Each week, I'm going to be talking to some of my friends, some people I've never even met before. We're going to be talking about people that I meet on the road through some of my experiences. We're talking about restaurants, talking about great stories, great guests, wild adventures, the whole nine yards. Get Duffified Live with me, Chef Brian Duffy, each week on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.